This is the In Focus podcast from The Hindu.
Hello and welcome to The Hindu's In Focus podcast with me, Amit Barua, your host for this episode. Political parties are in full campaign mode in India. There are 3 days to go for the third phase of polling as this podcast is being recorded. Campaign themes are more than evident as June 4th, the day for results, is exactly a month away. None other than Prime Minister Narendra Modi has launched scathing attacks on the Congress, saying it will take away SC, ST and OBC reservation quotas and hand it over to the Muslims. No such promise has been made in the Congress manifesto. Again, the Prime Minister in Gujarat said that if you have two buffaloes, the Congress will take away one if it comes to power. Again, he said this was in the Congress manifesto. Again, such a promise is not to be found in the manifesto document. Pakistan has also re-entered BJP's campaign themes, while opposition parties are attacking the ruling party at the center on a range of issues. I'm joined by columnist and author Nilanjan Mukhopadhyay to discuss some of these issues and their implications for Indian democracy. Welcome to the In Focus podcast, Nilanjan.
Thank you, Amit.
Nilanjan, what do you make of the Prime Minister's campaign theme so far?
Does he have a theme? Is there one theme? Yes, there is one. That is lies about the Congress manifesto. That has been one major theme of his, besides, of course, stirring up communal polarization. I would say that Prime Minister Modi has possibly been the biggest publicist of something which would otherwise not have really been noticed or discussed much, that is the Congress manifesto. I don't remember any recent election, especially after the 2014 election, which the Congress lost very badly, either the 2019 election or the various strings of series of assembly elections which have happened between 2014 and now, when the Congress manifesto has been talked about so much as it is being done now. Essentially, to me, it shows that Mr. Modi appears to be much more anxious about the result and about the way the election is progressing than what appeared in the beginning of the campaign. He definitely is on more unsure footing now than what he was in the beginning. At the moment, a large number of people, including I, have stuck our neck out to say that the narrative is not exactly going the way it was planned, that it is going awry, that there is some problem. You can see from the expression of Mr. Modi's face, from the way in which he's going about delivering his speeches, that this is not the Modi, the confident Modi of winning elections that we have got so used to from the Gujarat days and then from 2014 onward at the national level. In many ways, it reminds me of the exasperation that was there in the voice and the face and the content of the speeches which Modi delivered in 2015, which was the first electoral humiliation after he became the Prime Minister in 2014. That's what I think to begin off this conversation of.
Nilanjan, you've been following elections in India. You know, you've authored a biography of Narendra Modi. You follow the BJP and RSS carefully. I want to ask you that one of the things in his speeches which we've noticed is a very direct reference to Muslims, you know. Is this something new for Indian politics, or do you think direct naming that, you know, X will be taken away from Y and will be given to Muslims, is this a kind of a first?
No, of course it is not a first. It is not a first for Mr. Modi. You know, communal polarization.
No, but has he directly named community?
I'll just come to it. You know, referring to Muslims in a derogatory manner is second nature to Mr. Modi. Let me remind you of a speech which he delivered in September 2002, the time when he actually set up the electoral machinery of the BJP first in Gujarat and then at the national level. This was the election after the 2002 riots, which he wanted to advance, but he couldn't because of a fairly vigilant Election Commission of India and the Chief Election Commissioner, Mr. J.M. Lingdo. Anyway, the elections were held in November and December 2002, a few months earlier than what it was normally scheduled in early 2003. It would have been due in 2003, that's what I'm trying to say. Now, in September 2002, prior to the formal launch of the electoral campaign of the BJP, Mr. Modi, in one of his speeches, justified his government's decision to close down riot relief camps by saying that he did not want to run baby-producing factories. Now, what does baby-producing factories mean? It means that in this riot relief camp, obviously there were Muslims at that time because greater number of Muslims were affected in the riots of 2002 than the Hindus. There were more relief camps for the Muslims than for the Hindus. So in this relief camps, which have been, you know, which had been shut down, the Muslims were there, and what were they doing? They were producing babies. Now it gets into this entire Sangh Parivar's narrative over the last several decades that Hindus are on way to becoming a minority in their own country. Now, let me remind you this narrative that Hindus becoming a minority actually first originated from Assam, from that part of India where you possibly have roots. It started from there in the course of the Assam agitation in the late 1970s and early 80s. Balasaheb Deoras was the first one who actually voiced this concern about the Hindus becoming a minority. So 22 years later, Mr. Modi, besides, of course, you know, referring to issues like Kabristan and Shamshan Ghat in 2017 in the Uttar Pradesh election, or calling upon voters in Karnataka in June last year, he take the name of Bajrang Bali and press the button. 22 years later, what does Mr. Modi says? That the Congress will snatch away the wealth of you poor people and going to distribute it to those people who have more children, who produce more children, call back to baby producing factories, and that they are infiltrators, ghuspaithi. That is what exactly says. Now, infiltration is something another part of the Sangh Parivar's political campaign. So naming Muslims is not anything new. It is Mr. Modi's second nature. And also fits in perfectly with the Sangh Parivar's ideology and programs and the political vocabulary.
Nilanjan, I want to ask you, I think it's evident and direct, the kind of language that we've been hearing these past couple of weeks. Complaints have been made to the Election Commission. How do you assess what the Election Commission has done or not done so far on this issue?
I would say that I'm very disappointed with the Election Commission. It is supposed to be an impartial and a fair institution. But what we have been seeing in the last few years, especially after 2014, a very gradual decline in the fairness and the impartiality of the Election Commission, I think that is continuing unabated. I had hopes that the two new election commissioners, given the fact that possibly not much thought was given to their selection prior to their appointment, would possibly act a bit more fairly than what they would have. But I think there is an institutional decay because the Election Commission is just not the one chief election commissioner and two election commissions, but there is a fairly large institution. So has in the last 10 years, the rot got into the body structure of the Election Commission? If it has, then I think it is extremely worried. And we have to couple this worry with the fact that of grave and a fairly significant discrepancy between The tentative turnout figures on the evening of the polling in the first phase and second phase, and the final figures, which were released after almost 10 days, unprecedented delay. So does it mean that in this 10 days, very quietly, the turnout rates, which were fairly low, much to the concern of the BJP and the Sangh Parivar, has it been somehow or the other tampered with? You know, I'm not making an allegation. I'm just putting these questions on the public domain. Has the Election Commission explained? Yesterday also, they issued a formal statement. They have not explained as to what caused this delay. And unless and until we get answers to the questions which are being put to the Election Commission, this election will end with huge question marks on the credibility and the impartiality and fairness of the Election Commission.
Nilanjan, before I come to some of the themes and whatever you're seeing so far in the election campaign, I just want to ask you, does the Election Commission also have a role for, say, what's happened in Surat, you know, the withdrawal of all candidates, then declaring the BJP candidate victorious? Then we saw that the Congress candidate in Indore also was forced to withdraw his candidature, and we also see a report in the Scroll website which says that as many as 16 candidates have withdrawn their candidature in Gandhinagar, which happens to be the constituency of Home Minister Amit Shah. Looking at all this, do you feel that the Election Commission should also be focused on what's happening as far as some of these constituencies are concerned?
You know, let me also, before getting into the reply, also add Khajuraho constituency in Madhya Pradesh to this list of constituencies which have seen mysterious dropping out of opposition candidates. Khajuraho seat was allotted to the India Alliance partner by the Congress to the Samajwadi Party, and under fairly controversial circumstances, her nomination paper was rejected, citing some reason which evoked protest from the candidate and also from the Congress party. There are a large number of constituencies like Indore, like Gandhinagar, which you said, and also like Khajuraho, where elections took place, but with reduced number of, or will take place with reduced number of candidates. But Surat is a case apart. The election has been declared and the BJP candidate has been declared victorious. Now, I have written an article, you know, arguing that this is legally contentious, and if the judiciary will fairly scrutinize this case, you know, if and when the Congress party, as it has declared that they intend to move court on this, the reason for this is that the decision to announce the election and hand over the elected certificate to the BJP candidate is legally untenable, because since 2013, after the Supreme Court came out with its verdict, and from the November-December 2013 assembly elections in Madhya Pradesh, Rajasthan, Chhattisgarh, Delhi and Mizoram, nota, none of the above has been a permanent notional candidate, that's the word which I use, which stands against whoever is in the fray. So there is always one candidate. So there must have been, there should have been, in fact, that's a better way of saying it, there should have been a contest between the BJP candidate and Nota in Surat. You know, I may be sounding fairly ridiculous to make this argument, but the point is that this is democracy where full fairness must be seen. If there is an option for the voter, why was that not given? Even if one voter in Surat was deprived of using the nota facility or recording on the nota option, the button, that person, any citizen of Surat, can actually go to court and file a case saying that his democratic right was taken away by the Election Commission and the election should be countermanded. And I would advise the Congress party to very seriously, you know, pursue this line, not just the Congress party, but also the civil society. I am not an activist, But I would definitely turn to my activist friends and tell them, you know, that this is possibly something which they must get it examined by some of the legal luminaries who are there in their midst.
Nilanjan, we are in the thick of the political campaign. And, you know, unlike in 2019, when, you know, Operation Balakot and what happened, you know, we know all those events, that seemed to be, in a sense, a very dominant and an overarching kind of vote-fetching gain for the BJP. Do you see anything like that in the current elections?
You know, the problem with the BJP is that unlike in 2014, when the national All India-wise narrative was that Modi has to be given a chance and the UPA government has to be voted out. And in 2019, as you correctly mentioned, the matter of hyper-nationalism post-Pulwama and the strikes in Balakot. This election does not have an overarching national narrative, and that is the biggest problem for the BJP. We used to say earlier during the coalition era, especially in the late 1990s and the first decade of the 21st century, that Indian Lok Sabha elections are not one election, but an aggregate of 543 elections. This time, it is actually an aggregate of not 543, as I was telling you, because if you take Surat out, it's already been declared by this election commission. But it's an aggregate of 542 Lok Sabha elections, each with local factors, candidate, local issues, and a host of other problems, which is actually making it desperate for Mr. Modi to try to build a national narrative on the basis of Islamophobia, other forms of raising communal polarization.
You don't think that the Ram Mandir, you know, which, you know, even in this CSDS Lok Niti survey, you know, many people flag that as one of the big achievements of the Modi government. Don't you feel that issue for the BJP is or should be a winning sort of number?
You know, one of the advantages of having covered the Ayodhya story right from the 1980s has been a fairly large community of people who became friends. You know, they stopped being journalistic contacts and also became friends who I would occasionally chat, even on phone and, you know, if not going. What has happened in Ayodhya is that everybody thought that the crowd which has assembled in Ayodhya from the 20th of January or maybe a couple of days prior to that, after the 22nd, Pran Pratishtha ceremony and the week or 10 days that happened afterwards, those crowds would remain. That kind of euphoria would continue to prevail right through the election campaign. That is why, you know, that this entire election schedule was also drawn up in such a manner. The Pran Pratishtha was scheduled right in January. It could have been done anytime because in any case, it is a half complete structure. It could have been inaugurated in December, it could have been done in September last, it could have been done in November this year, much later. Still, the temple would not be complete. So the very fact that it was done in January was that within a month or 40 days, the election campaign would be announced, the schedule would be declared by the election commission, and then Ramji will take us to South Block. That was the general presumption. That has not happened. Reports from Ayodhya say that the crowds have thinned. The town is not teeming with throngs of devotees. Yes, there is a fair crowd in front of the Ram temple, but it is not euphoric. People are going as a first-time thing to see, but is Ayodhya becoming, as many of us, including I, you know, felt that Modi is trying to develop a Hindu Vatican, but is Ayodhya going to become a destination which is going to rival the three most important religious places in Uttar Pradesh or Uttarakhand, that is Haridwar, Varanasi and Allahabad? I have my doubts. Because Ayodhya does not provide the extra which all these cities do. There is far greater amount of history and spiritual association associated with them than with Ayodhya. You can go there finish whatever you want to see in Ayodhya within a matter of a few hours, and then are you going to stay on? No. People who have loans, you know, I've spoken to some friends, you know, who say that a large number of shopkeepers and other businessmen took loans in anticipation of huge crowds. They are now seriously worried how they are going to repay those loans, because the turnover is not just as much as it was in January or maybe the first week of February.
Nanjan, you mentioned...
So Ram Mandir, while the Ram Mandir, definitely the completion of its inauguration of it, definitely gladdened the hearts of large number of Hindus in this country. But let us not forget the fact that even in 2019, almost 60% of the Hindus did not vote for the BJP. So Ram Mandir has really not become the overarching election narrative which is going to take the BJP into power this time.
So Nilanjan, when you say, you know, aggregate of 542 elections, as you mentioned a short while earlier, so are you trying to suggest that it will be local issues, it will be issues that concern people, possibly price rise, joblessness, environmental degradation, whatever it is? What do you think is going to be the basis on which people then vote?
You know, very difficult to say that what will be the basis on which people will finally cast their vote. It may eventually turn out when the results are announced on June that the BJP actually romps home. But we have to base our understanding and whatever we are saying on the basis of what is appearing on the surface at the moment. And most importantly, from the body language of the BJP leaders. What we are seeing, an extremely irritated Mr. Modi. The irritation shows on his face. You know, and I am saying this with a certain basis for having tracked him politically, his political rise, right from the early 90s onwards. You know, one knows that how he behaves, what is, the, you know, studied the tonality of his voice very carefully, you know, the choice of vocabulary, what themes he articulates. He's not talking about crossing 400 along with allies anymore. He's not talking about a large number of things. He's not talking about jobs. He's not talking about, he's not even talking much about Amrit Kaal, you know, which has been one of his fanciful, word creations, catchphrases, which he used, which he introduced in the vocabulary about 2 years, 2 years ago, you know, when he was when he was delivering the Independence Day speech in 2022 to mark 75 years of Indian independence. So a lot of things are missing and a lot of things are visible that things are not going exactly as the BJP had anticipated. People may finally be voting on the basis of being unemployed, of price rise, of welfare schemes more touted upon, and everybody has might have been delivered one gas cylinder, but then has any survey been done that out of these, what percentage of these cylinders are lying empty at home because the family cannot simply afford a refill? I have been to villages where people have kept it aside, essentially to keep a lot of empty cylinders, to keep a lot of their kitchen stuff on.
So Nilanjan, we've talked about the BJP, and as you rightly point out, that despite everything, it's quite possible that the party may romp home, on the 4th of June. But what I want to ask you before, you know, we wrap this up, how would you assess the state of the opposition?
If it is a 542 elections, you know, aggregate of 542 elections, you don't need a national opposition. But we do have a semblance of a national opposition in, or rather an alliance of opposition parties in large number of very significant states. You know, I referred to the Khajuraho seat in Madhya Pradesh. It's an instance where in Madhya Pradesh, there was actually no need for the Congress to leave one seat for the Samajwadi Party, but they did. In the interest of broader opposition alliance, you know, having a together. So I would say that, yes, there are shortfalls. I would have liked it if there was a common minimum program. But then, would it have become a national narrative? I have my doubts because, simply speaking, you know, the opposition parties do not have the kind of resources which the BJP has to be able to actually convert it into something which everybody gets talking about. Yes, there could have been better seat adjustments in states like West Bengal. That is what appears on surface. But is it a tactical move on part of Mamata Banerjee and also with the Congress in loop that let us not, you know, or rather, you know, let us divide the anti-Trinamool vote in Bengal between the Congress and the left on one hand and the BJP on the other hand, and let's not fight together so that all the anti-Trinamool Congress vote, because the Trinamool is the single largest poll in Bengal, so the strongest vote against it would, you know, against any party would be against the Trinamool Congress. So that shouldn't go to the BJP, let it get divided. So I would say that it could have been better. There could have been better adjustment. There could have been, especially in the early part of the campaign. But as we are heading closer to the remaining about 300 odd you know, constituencies, elections are still pending, I think the opposition has come together.
Well, Nilanjan Mukhopadhyay, it's a quite hazardous and a difficult job, you know, to even fathom how what the Indian voter is thinking, how things are going to play out. And this 1 month is a long time in Indian politics or politics anywhere else. So thank you so much for all your insights into what's happening and what can be expected. And I do hope to talk to you again on the Hindus in Focus podcast. Thank you, Nilanjan Mukhopadhyay.
Thank you, Amit, for getting me. And it was a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you once again.
In Focus will be back soon with analysis of the biggest news issues. In the meantime, you can find our podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other platforms. Just search for In Focus by The Hindu. We'll see you soon.